Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development has a program to help Native homebuyers secure mortgages. But in many ways, the program is not living up to its promise to help build wealth for Native people. We'll hear about what's needed to improve the Indian Home Loan Guarantee Program. We'll also explore some other solutions for Native homebuyers who might be reluctant to navigate the often complex process for home ownership on tribal land. We're back right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Megan Kamrick in for Antonia Gonzalez. The Blackfeet Nation's chief of over 40 years, Earl Oldperson, died Wednesday at the age of 92 after a long battle with cancer. Aaron Bolton reports Oldperson was a longtime leader for the tribe in northwest Montana and worked hard to keep Blackfeet language and traditional culture alive.
If you attended any large gathering or event on the Blackfeet Nation, you were likely to hear Chief Earl Oldperson welcome tribal members and guests. That welcome was usually accompanied by a song like the one he sang during Grand Entry at North American Indian Days in 2019.
He had this kind of a genius type of ability to hear Indian music and store that in his mind, you know, but just hear it once.
Blackfeet Tribal Historic Preservation Officer John Murray says Oldperson was able to hold on to vast amounts of traditional Blackfeet knowledge through the 1950s and into the 1970s, when much of Blackfeet culture and language was lost.
But Earl stayed close to it, and he's been an advocate for promoting the language and was able to retain them songs, so when the culture started coming back, they would go to him.
Oldperson became the chief of the tribe in 1978, but also had a storied career as a political leader for the tribe. He served on the Blackfeet Tribal Business Council for decades, starting in the 1950s. He became the president of the National Congress of American Indians from 1969 to 1971, and worked on national pieces of legislation like the American Indian Religious Freedom Act of 1978. His nephew, Terry Tansey, remembers him as a dedicated family man that enjoyed the ranching lifestyle and had a deep love of horse culture. He says Oldperson lived by a simple phrase he heard growing up in the 1930s.
They would all say their language. And what that means is, good morning, get up, try hard.
Tansey says that phrase reflects the legacy his uncle left behind. For National Native News, I'm Aaron Bolton.
At the annual convention of the National Congress of American Indians, Quinault Vice President Fawn Sharp was elected to her second term as president. Mark Macaro, chairman of the Pechanga Bang of Luiseno Indians, was newly elected first vice president. Sault Ste. Marie Tribe of Chippewa Indians chairperson Aaron Payment and Stockbridge Muncie Band of Mohican Indians president Shannon Holsley were elected recording secretary and treasurer. Sharp spoke about the challenges tribes have faced during the coronavirus pandemic, but also said she believes the coming years will be an era of reconciliation, restoration, and healing for Indigenous people. In a suburb of Atlanta this week, a county commission voted to remove a relic from a downtown square that critics have dubbed the Genocide Cannon. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution reports the cannon has ties to the Indian War of 1836, in which 3,500 Native Americans died and also led to the Trail of Tears. The DeKalb County Commission voted to remove the cannon, which was placed on the square in 1906 by the Daughters of the Confederacy. And in Mexico City, a statue of Christopher Columbus will be replaced by a female pre-colonial indigenous figure. The New York Times reports the statue will be a larger replica of a stone carving found earlier this year in the state of Veracruz. It dates to the time of Columbus's voyages, more than 500 years ago. The move follows the reversal of an earlier decision by the government to commission a work of an indigenous woman for the site. Hyperallergic reports that brought condemnation by artists, writers, and curators who signed an open letter last month opposing the selection of a male artist who did not identify as indigenous. For National Native News, I'm Megan Kamrick.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for nearly 40 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
The Indian Arts and Crafts Board promotes Indian artists of federally recognized tribes through its online source directory. Information on this no-charge opportunity available at doi.gov/IACB. Who support this program?
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. In even the easiest cases, securing a home loan can be an arduous and stressful process. A mortgage for a home on tribal land is significantly more complicated. Many conventional lenders don't offer loans for tribal homes. The reasons are varied, but it comes down to the added time, resources, and financial risk that come with them. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development oversees the Home Loan Guarantee Program, designed to increase homeownership and build Native people's collective wealth. But that program has certain drawbacks and flaws that have proved detrimental for some individuals and families. We're going to hear about those today and get advice on how to work within the system to get the most out of homeownership. We'd like to hear from you as well. What is your homeownership experience? Is tribal land a deterrent to buying a home? Does your tribe have support that puts homeownership within better reach? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-99-NATIVE. Joining us today from Sioux Falls, South Dakota, is Jewel Burnett. He's the branch manager at First Tribal Lending, and he's an enrolled member of the Rosebud Sioux Tribe. Jewel, welcome to Native America Calling.
Morning.
Joining us from the San Felipe Pueblo in New Mexico is Isaac Perez. He's executive director of San Felipe Pueblo Housing Authority. Welcome to Native America Calling, Isaac.
Glad to be here. Good morning, everybody.
And joining us from Pine Ridge, South Dakota, is Colleen Steele. She's executive director at Mazasqua Wikaso Otipi Financial Incorporated. She's Oglala Sioux. Welcome to Native American Calling, Colleen.
Good morning.
I'd like to begin our conversation today with Jewel. Jewel, buying a home on tribal land presents challenges. I think anyone living in a tribal community gets that, okay? Without digging too deeply into details, can you give us a listener-friendly summary of that home purchase process and why it presents challenges to Native home buyers?
Sure. So obviously, you know, there's some negotiations between, you know, government to government being HUD and the tribe, the lender being the third party out there. Sits and awaits, you know, the negotiations, the approval of the documents that are going to be used for a tribal trust land transaction. So once that's done, you know, if you're working with a lender that is familiar with the process, they can typically walk you through step by step and what your first step should be. And a lot of times that first step is dealing with the land situation. So we're gonna take you through a process to get you pre-approved, tell you what the ceiling amount is that you appear to qualify for based upon what your credit looks like and what your income looks like. From there, it's basically in the borrower's hands to take off running from there, and that lender should be walking with those borrowers from that point going forward with any questions. And that's typically what happens. There's a lot of questions back and forth. That initial conversation is quite detailed, and it could be overwhelming to a lot of people once they get that checklist of items that the lender needs. So we try and calm them down, walk them through that checklist, and give them the context that we may have created over the last 20 plus years within the tribe, within the Bureau of Indian Affairs, to get them through the process as quickly as possible.
What types of banks and mortgage companies make loans on reservation trust land? Do native home buyers have options when seeking a lender?
Well, if you go out to HUD.gov, you'll see a long list of approved HUD 184 lenders, but I think a lot of those lenders are what some of us call cherry picking. They'll do the fee simple land deals every day, all day, but there's not too many of us focusing on the trust land transactions across the nation. So there isn't really a huge choice in lenders, which is unfortunate, and that's why the HUD 180 program was created in trying to attract more lenders to Indian Country to bring that mortgage capital and make it available to those tribal members wanting to live on, you know, their trust lands.
Now, you just mentioned HUD. Are there other federal agencies that are included in this home mortgage process?
Yes. So USDA has been coming up, and they offer programs. They've made some recent changes with some pilot programs here in South Dakota that a couple of tribes have had some great success with, and I think Colleen is one of those. And Lakota Vogel up in Cheyenne River is part of that process, the 502 program with USDA. So USDA programs have options for trust lands, and also the VA direct program. There's some minimal success there. It's a painstaking process, even more so, I think, from what we've heard from some of our veterans, which is kind of sad, but it is possible to get a VA loan on tribal trust land.
What is the role of tribal governments in this process?
Their initial role is to work in, you know, the lender can help make the contact at HUD, but the tribe needs to submit their foreclosure and eviction processes if they do have a court system that can hear those. But that's a whole other conversation, I think, because that's one of the biggest problems that we see out there is the foreclosure piece is something that the HUD Department of Justice is working on. It's a sticking point, but the tribe also needs to negotiate with HUD the format of the lease, the home site lease that they're going to use for tribal trust land transactions. And that sometimes can take a long time. There is a recommended HUD one-stop lease that HUD, BIA, USDA, VA, all the government entities have agreed to. That's kind of a template that the tribes can use to get started with. But as we know, each tribe is unique in some way, shape, or form, and that's you got to be respectful of that. So we do have several tribes that are on that approved list that have done that with HUD. That's the first step in the tribe's process to get them placed on the approval list to participate in the 184 program.
I'd like to bring Isaac into the conversation. Isaac, conventional mortgages that most Americans who don't live on reservation land, what they use to buy a home, are backed by two forms of collateral. You have the home itself, the dwelling, and then you have the land on which it sits. Now, that seems logical to me. Why don't conventional mortgages work on tribal lands?
You know, that's a good question, Sean. And what we've done here at San Felipe is I agree with the other panelists, there are documents, template documents that are out there and available that meet the boilerplate language for construction loans, 184 loans, and various other federal programs. However, the documents themselves, here at San Felipe, we actually customize our own document as far as leases and that sort of stuff to better protect the Pueblo, because the boilerplate template documents that are out there are pretty much, from what I understand, the government's documents that they send out to all the tribes throughout. And there are numerous issues on why the regular conventional loans are not offered on most of the tribes and do not work. I know we only have 40 minutes here, but I could probably go on and on about that. What we've done here at San Felipe is found a way to utilize HUD-specific loan programs such as Section 184 and Title VI, which is a component of NAHASDA, Indian Housing Block Grant, and been very successful in using the Title VI program as a construction tool and coming in with Section 184 loans to basically convert the Title VI loan into Section 184 loans. The last part of that for us is on a final part, the Pueblo here at San Felipe, because of the financial impact that was having and money leaving San Felipe Pueblo, Pueblo years ago proposed an idea to me, and we ran with it, that the Pueblo itself, Sean, became the lender, the bank, and paid off the Section 184 loans that we have. So now our money stays here on the reservation. Payments are made on the reservation, and that money is recycled and put into other programs here on the Pueblo with any revenue that's generated off of them. And to me, that's a unique way to keep money here on the Pueblo.
Certainly a unique way. So Jewel's role is as a lender. So in that case, he's an independent, he's a third-party lender. He represents an organization that steps in and provides capital for homeowners. But in this example you're providing with San Felipe Pueblo, the tribe itself is the lender. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And it's a little bit of a complicated process, but I'll be very quick with it. Pretty much what we do, and we're not the only ones, Sean. I understand there's a couple of tribes in Arizona. I believe White Mountain is one of them. That have done this process, and because of the lack of 184 lenders available, and I'll give you an example just right here. You know, we're in central New Mexico, and we don't have a lender currently right now offering construction loans and permanent loans to our members right now. We're having to go out of state. We're having to deal with different lending institutions, one that will do a construction loan, one that will do the permanent loan. The banks that we have met with in the past that have offered the, I guess, what you'd call one-stop shop service.
Isaac, I'm sorry. We are going to have to take a quick break. We'll be right back. I'm going to give you a chance to finish your thought after our break. I'm your host, Sean Spruce.
Some tribes have long acknowledged and respected people who don't conform to specific genders, but modern society is still adjusting to the concept of non-binary gender identities. Join us for the next Native America Calling as we discuss what non-binary means and how people are adjusting to new realities for gender identity.
Too many do not have access to affordable high-speed internet. That's why AARP fought for the Emergency Broadband Benefit, a federal program to help lower the cost of high-speed internet for eligible households. Those who may have experienced financial setbacks during the pandemic or are struggling to get by may be eligible for a discount of up to $50 per month for high-speed internet or up to $75 per month for households on tribal lands. Info at aarp.org/EBB. AARP supports this show.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Do you own a home on tribal land? Do you feel good about your decision to purchase a home on a reservation? Give us a call today and get in on the discussion. The number is 1-800-996-2848. Before break, Isaac was talking about a different way of providing homeownership opportunities to Native American people at San Felipe Pueblo. And in this case, the tribe itself actually serves a role as a lender. Now, Isaac, that sounds great, but doesn't it also put the tribe potentially exposed to losses, say if a homeowner can't make their mortgage payments? And doesn't it ultimately even maybe place the tribe in a position of being the bad guy that might have to remove somebody from their home? How does that work? Does that happen?
Good question, Sean. And actually, it's no different than a typical 184 loan. that we would take out with an outside lender. If that, you know, unfortunately, if that situation ever does occur and there is a default, the tribe ultimately has right of first refusal on that unit and is actually the one that comes into the process for eviction. So either way, unfortunately, the tribe ends up being the so-called bad guy in either option. However, with the direction that we've taken, there is basically no outside lender. It's basically the tribe, the tribal court system, and the housing authority. Unfortunately, here at San Felipe, since we've been going through the Title VI, convert them to 184, and tribe paying them off finance program, we've done 220 of those mortgages. We've had an eviction total of four families here on the Pueblo, and the program has been very successful. But yes, from time to time, we do have to step in, follow policy, and help families. What we've done here at San Felipe to help with the default, you know, the late payments, the defaults, if a family gets in trouble, being that all families that we are servicing are low to moderate income, they automatically qualify for NAHASDA services for mortgage or rental assistance. And so, because we're so limited with our NAHASDA funding every year, what we've simply done is allocate a certain amount of money every year through our Indian housing plan to help with third-party loans, third-party mortgage loans. And if our families do, unfortunately, get into a case where they have a hardship or something has happened, and as we all know, we've been going through this pandemic now for a year and a half, so we've had a ton of that. And so what we've been able to do, Sean, is assist those families, not just with this NAHASDA assistance, but also through HAF funding, mortgage assistance funding that has come out over the last year and a half through the government. And we've been able to help families in that way. So we have a plan B in the event that those things do happen, because they do. You know, let's be realistic. People run into hardships, not just on the Pueblo, but all over. And we do have a plan B to help them through that process.
Sure, sure. So obviously, San Felipe Pueblo has a lot of capacity. It sounds like they have capacity to do lending. It sounds like they have capacity to provide some of this other support to home buyers. And I'd like to ask Jewel, because Jewel, you're based in South Dakota, but you work with Native American home buyers across the country. Is that correct?
That's correct. We're nationwide.
So a program like Isaac is describing, is that realistic in so many of the other Native communities that you serve, or do you see a lot of tribal communities that are probably aren't at that point yet? What are your thoughts on that?
Right, yeah, and it is definitely a conversation throughout Indian country, you know, to have a setup like Isaac describes, because that's, you know, that's a great setup. And a lot of the tribes or pueblos that do offer that, you know, we can't compete with that program. Typically the ones we've seen, the interest rates are a little bit lower and what have you. So it's great for the local tribal member and the economy, like Isaac said. So would tribes, you know, can all tribes do it? Probably not, you know, but is it realistic for, you know, a pretty good percentage of them? I think so. They just need to find people like Isaac, you know, that can take the pull by the horns and make things work there locally. And then obviously Isaac has full backing of tribal council administration. So that's a big step, you know, in making that happen locally.
Jewel, I once heard you mention that it took you 4 years to close a home mortgage on tribal land. Now, I'm going to hope that that was an exception to the rule, not the norm, but about how long does it typically take an individual to get a home loan, get it closed, and move in, have a house?
Yeah, true story. It was right at 4 years before that borrower actually got all the way through the process, and a lot of it had to deal with the tribe and the land documents, the Bureau of Indian Affairs. So we have since come a long ways with that. So that was probably, 18 years ago that transaction happened. So in the last 20 plus years, we've obviously created a lot of friendships, partnerships throughout the Bureau of Indian Affairs and tribes across the country. And that's what it takes, because education is our biggest hurdle, in this whole process. So it doesn't matter if it's the borrower or the BIA Realty officer or someone at the tribe's realty office. So we need to all come together to the table and talk about what it takes to get it all the way through the process and what's needed. So it is a process that on a normal basis, on average, we still do have some hot spots where it takes a little bit longer than the norm, but we work through those issues every day. But on average, we can get stuff out of the Bureau fairly quickly these days, and it doesn't take 4 years anymore.
Well, that's promising. I'd like to bring Colleen into the conversation, and Jewel had just mentioned education. Colleen, you work with an organization, Masaska, and you provide education and services to families that want to become home buyers. Can you talk about some of the challenges that you see with potential home buyers there on Pine Ridge, and what do you folks do to assist those home buyers?
Sure. Well, a lot of the what comes across when they first start their intake, we do a soft pull, and what really the challenge right now with pretty much a lot of them is vehicle loans, high interest rate vehicle loans, and high interest rate credit cards. The predatory, the car dealerships come down here and they know everybody wants a car, and people get a car without really looking at the fine print, and the interest rate's like outrageous. So they're making, I seen one making $1,000 payment, and then pretty soon they can't pay it, so we help them with that. We have our credit coaches here are excellent. They help them with getting their credit paid off. We have a credit builder loan, so we help them pay that off. And once they pay it off, or even if they're halfway, they make every single payment on time, then we start the mortgage process with them. But credit is huge here. We do the classes, financial literacy classes, home buyer education, and it's a lot of the younger ones coming in, the younger generation that want to own a home. They want to become home owners, so they're doing the financial literacy and trying to build their credit. Credit is huge. The financial literacy is huge, to get them to understand that this is what you need to do. You have to have a budget. And our credit coach here, Amanda Standing Bear, is excellent. She works really well with our clients.
Well, it's great to hear that you are able to provide that support and help people with their credit, review credit reports, provide training to get them mortgage ready. Has the pandemic had a big impact in terms of folks' finances on Pine Ridge and some of these folks that are working to become home buyers themselves? How has the pandemic affected that?
It had a kind of a huge effect on them, but we also work with the state of South Dakota with the CARES Act. So if we had any, not just our clients, but any clients throughout the eastern side of the state, we've been able to help them also with the mortgage if the COVID affected their lives. We're able to help them with their mortgage payments also and their bills, utilities, whatever.
Okay.
So that was really a godsend for our clients and for other, mortgage holders that are out that are not on the reservation that are in the state of South Dakota. We're very grateful to for the CARES Act.
We have a caller listening on KZYK in Santee, Nebraska. His name is Melvin. Melvin, you're on the air.
Well, good morning. You know, in the country, there's a critical housing shortage. And to get more houses built, it should be a priority, but we should build them green. You know, a while back, there was some houses open in the village for sale. And I called one of my friends who is an Indian. He has a realty company. It's called Red Man Takes It Back Realty. And I asked him about that. He'd be interested in maybe buying these houses and getting some people from town back in them, you know, because they had to be worked on them. But he said there was just too much work. The supplies that was used to build all of these houses was very low quality, and that's why you have to do so much work on them. He would like to see the tribes get into building more greenhouses that more are more efficient for the people and investors, because greenhouses are very popular right now, and it would be great for our communities to start moving towards green and get away from them old HUD houses, you know, which that seems like they're all built with black mold, you know. I just feel that with any new housing that it should be green housing, because I feel that more of our banks and people would invest in, you know, a greenhouse because they know the qualities that was put in. I just think it would be a good move for the tribes. And I own my own home. I was lucky enough to go out in New York and work and have a good friend. And we came back here and we found this little farm and bought me this farm that day. And then he went back to New York and he does his realty and, you know, he's a lawyer by trade. But housing is big.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I hope the tribes can get into it.
Melvin, congratulations on being a homeowner yourself. And those are really, really good comments. And we do have just a few minutes before we go on our next break. And regarding green building, environmentally sustainable construction, I'd like to ask Isaac, because I believe that San Felipe Pueblo is also involved on the construction side of home ownership. Isaac, what are your thoughts about some of these green-friendly building strategies in Native communities?
Thanks, Sean. And let me just say, Myron is 100% correct. The old so-called HUD housing that we have here, I'll just say it nicely, the best building methods were not used. And that goes for methods and actually quality of material that went into them. And unfortunately, I think all of us ended up with a lot of those units. One thing, and I'm glad you brought it up, Sean, you know, we have what I'd like to consider a pretty successful model program here at San Felipe. And one of the reasons, or one of the major reasons that it is because of the staff that I have, which are all San Felipe tribal members. And one of my staff, I'm fortunate to have him here, is a tribal member and oversees our HUD-approved workforce account. And so we are are able not just to educate and build homes, but we build, Sean, our own homes through a tribal workforce where 100% of our crews are Pueblo San Felipe tribal members, and they're overseen by Mr. Randy Tenorio, who's my projects manager. Doing that, Sean, has saved us, especially in today's building cost world, I'd say 30 to 35% of what it would cost to build a home. And that's including a lot of energy efficiency when you start talking about appliances, water heaters, furnaces, energy efficient windows, those sort of things. We're not building homes anymore with 2x4s on the exterior with masonite, the only thing protecting them on the exterior. So we have incorporated a lot of these greener, energy efficient materials into our building. And because we do have our force account and we're not hiring a general contractor to come on to the Pueblo and pay an additional 30 to 35%, we're able to put more into the homes. But even with that, Sean, the unfortunately, to incorporate, you know, and go full green and go in that direction, it is a little bit pricey, especially today with construction material being so high. But yes, we have put in quite a bit of green components into our projects.
Isaac, thank you for those comments. We have to take a short break. We'll be right back. I'm your host, Sean Spruce.
I feel happier when my children and grandchildren spend time with me or someone comes to visit. We also need to stay active to keep our spirits alive. As elders, our teachings are needed more than ever. The more we're socially connected with family and community, the less health problems we'll have, the longer we'll live. Remember, you're not alone. Connected together, we'll stand strong. More on elder isolation and caregiver resources at connectedindigenouselders.org. The National Indian Council on Aging supports this show.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Has homeownership improved your financial well-being? Is renting a better option if you live on tribal land? There is still time to get in on this discussion. The number is 1-800-996-2848. What are you waiting for? Pick up that phone, call. I'd like to go back to Jewel. And, you know, Jewel, it's interesting. You're in South Dakota, and South Dakota as a state has a really high rate of home ownership. Close to 70% of South Dakotans are homeowners, and that puts South Dakota in the top 20 states nationally for home ownership, but the state's Native American residents are vastly underrepresented as homeowners. And we're talking about all of these different working parts, highly unique legalities that tribal lands are subject to. How can we improve this process to get more Native American families in homes?
You're right. There is a, you know, we're large land-based tribes here in the Dakotas, so there's a lot of land. There's a lot of people that would like home sites, and a lot of them do get home sites, and they put, you know, single wides or just use manufactured homes on them. So you got that happening. But I think part of the solution is examples like Isaac and San Felipe. You know, the tribe took the bull by the horns, and that's what it's going to take. You know, we've done several projects across Indian country for tribes where they're the borrower under the 184 program and built X amount of units on the reservation, whether they be for rental, professional staff that they're trying to attract to the communities, or for home ownership. So as Colleen and Isaac and I have said, you know, the education piece, not everybody's going to be mortgage ready, but there is a huge percentage of people out there in Indian country across the nation right now. I think the percentage on the call this week, I think it was 56% or 48%, are mortgage-ready Native Americans that could be homeowners. So you take a look at that, you know, and you look at what the challenges are, and we talk about some of them with the Bureau of the Challenges, land issues, and the tribe politics and things like that. But Isaac brought up another interesting situation right now is the cost of materials and what's it take to get a home built on a reservation from ground up. Well, one, you need contractors that know what they're doing, right? And that's a problem here. here in South Dakota, and we're addressing that through the South Dakota Tribal Housing Coalition and trying to get more of our tribal members to be licensed and bonded, you know, contractors across the country. So that's one thing that's helping here, and a couple of reservations have taken that and ran with it and doing well. Lack of housing is another thing. As Melvin and I brought that up, that's very common here in the Dakotas. So there aren't many houses at all that are for sale on our reservations here in South Dakota. And the ones that do come up for sale are typically homes that aren't on trust land. And the ones that do come up for sale that are in good shape and have been well taken care of, they sell very quickly. And in the last year and a half, you know, our tribal members have been at a disadvantage with trying to buy a house because the housing market has just absolutely been insane. And it's a seller's market. And in many cases, the seller is getting over their asking price on the house. And our tribal members just cannot compete with that. So those are some of the main issues that we're seeing. But I think the tribe, the housing authorities at the tribal level have a stake in this game. And I think one of their biggest concerns is management of the project. And obviously, you know, lack of contractors to build a large tract of homes on the reservation.
Now, Jewel, earlier in the conversation, talked about some of the delays on the federal side with regard to HUD approving and endorsing loans. And a note of disclosure, we did reach out to HUD, and they were not able to provide someone for today's show. However, what can be done at the federal level? Because it does seem like a lot of the delays are occurring at that stage of the process. What can be done by the feds to improve this process?
Use the technology, which I think they're slowly making that move. I mean, you're right. The endorsement process at the HUD level is a deterrent for other lenders to come into the game. So we had as many as 1,500 loans sitting at the HUD office waiting for a loan guarantee. And we have a year to provide that guarantee to the secondary market. Otherwise, we've got to buy that loan back. So HUD is far behind on, you know, a few things, that being one of the majors. They've made some recent changes that hopefully will help in that process with using the technology and what have you. But the HUD 184 program staff, you know, since the beginning of time has always been understaffed. They haven't had a lot of support staff there. And hopefully we see some changes in that going forward also, because it's a very manual program. And it should be that way. We don't want this thing to ever be a program where you have, you know, loan officers sitting in front of computers, punching in people's information and pressing the enter button and seeing what you get back for an answer. We need this to be a manual process that's culturally sensitive to, you know, the reservation, the tribe that we're dealing with, because I don't care what anybody says. If you say you've seen it all today, you haven't. Every file that we get is somewhat unique and it's in some shape or form. So we have to keep that. We never want this to be a conventional conforming program.
Now, Jewel, aside from making home loans, what else do you do to strengthen home ownership in Indian Country?
Well, I attend a lot of homebuyer education classes when asked. I travel throughout the country and attend conferences and do breakout sessions to educate and to bring awareness to the program. I was reluctant and should have mentioned this earlier with the previous question, but Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, there's a duty to serve piece out there, and they are working with tribes today in trying to bring conventional programs to Indian Country, so we just don't have a limited choice of programs. So there is that going on, but that isn't going to make a huge difference real quick. It's going to be a kind of a crawl type situation on a case-by-case situation with each tribe. But that's a lot of what I do. As we know, there's a lot of turnover every 2 to 4 years at the tribal level. So the new people coming in may have never heard about the HUD 184 program. And not to mention a lot of our Native families across the country, that's not a different conversation that they have at the dinner table about, hey, let's talk about owning our home someday. It was never something that my family discussed around the dinner table. So it's a constant education piece, trying to get the word out, and just to let people know that just because you want to live on trust land that's not going to, that shouldn't deter you. It's possible. So let's get to the right people and let's have that discussion and see what we need to do to make it happen.
Let's go to the phones. We have Todd. Actually, he's listening online. He's in Phoenix, Arizona. Todd, you're on the air.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear, Todd.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to add a comment that that I think would help scale this homeownership effort nationally. And this is not a new concept, but just in a nutshell, I'll say that Indian Country needs to be its own Fannie Mae. So we need our own secondary market to recycle the funds that we're investing in homeownership right now. So Isaac's got a great program there in New Mexico, and he has a lot of capital tied up in his projects. And so the next step would be to have a secondary market to sell these mortgages to. And it would be very similar to the Ameren setup, where you have tribes as investors, and they would buy these mortgages. And so the tribe would be basically, you know, a secondary market player. And this is, I'm familiar with a model that's worked successfully before. So I think that that's something that would allow smaller tribes to get into this homeownership arena and start lending. You know, we don't need to wait for Fannie Mae. We can do this ourselves. So that's just an idea to be able to help tribes revolve their funds so they can build more homes going forward.
Well, thank you for those comments, Todd. And I would like to have Jewel respond to that, because Jewel, you don't carry all of these loans on the books at First Tribal Lending. Isn't that correct? You do sell some of those loans to another party, right? Can you talk about how that works and if this secondary market that Todd is proposing, if that's feasible right now at this stage in the realm of Indian housing?
Yeah, I mean, Todd's going down the right road. I mean, it's an understanding, so it's downsizing it. And, you know, the Minnesota tribes had done just that. So there's a consortium of a majority of the Minnesota tribes that created their own lending pool up there. And they participate in that together. They fund it together and they manage it together. So it's not something that's, I don't think Todd was saying it's not unseen, but even at a smaller scale like Isaac has. So, but yes, we sell all of our HUD Warranty 4 loans off to the secondary market to Ginny May. So right now, any mortgage lender or any bank that is, you know, able to sell their loans off on the secondary market, there's not just those three choices of Fannie, Freddie, or Ginnie Mae. Federal Home Loan Bank buys loans, and I think there's some other entities out there that are buying loans also. But I think what Todd was getting at is, you know, Ginnie Mae, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, all these other investors, particularly Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, you know, they develop programs. Once they develop a program, they make the lender community aware of, hey, this is a new program that you can offer that will buy these mortgages if you underwrite to this standard. So I think what Todd is saying is that if the tribes got together and created their own secondary market, you know, they could create their own program. And that's what Minnesota did. I think even the Ho-Chunk Nation out of Wisconsin had their own, you know, program. Mazaska is an example, and all these CDFIs, these native CDFIs, they've created their own program and standards of which they're underwriting to and which, you know, they hold those standards to those members qualifying for those programs. So it's a great idea, you know, and something I always, you know, being in the mortgage and banking industry for the last 30 plus years, a lot of tribes, the conversation comes to the table, says we should start our own bank. Well, it's a great idea, and some tribes do have their own bank. Well, it isn't that easy. You know, there's regulatory requirements. There's, again, who are you going to have run the bank? So they're all good ideas, and a lot of them have taken advantage of, you know, some of the tribes have taken advantage of that and done it. And I think they're successful when they, you know, the ones that are in the business today.
I want to go back to Colleen. Colleen, something that's coming across loud and clear in our conversation today is that Native American people want to become homeowners. And when we hear stories about families and individuals who have worked hard and they've improved their credit and they've built savings, they have income, but for reasons that are beyond their control, they can't purchase a home. These folks are being excluded from the American dream. And I want to ask you, Colleen, what do you say to folks like that when you work with them there in Pine Ridge?
Well, we've never had a situation like that, ever. We've have always helped our clients become homeowners. We've never, ever not turned anyone away or came across it, any kind of situation like that. We've always helped. If it's like the credit issues, we help them. You know, if it's the lease, we help them. We walk them through it. You know, that we've never had anything happen like that to any of our clients. So, you know, I don't have that answer.
Well, I'm really glad to hear that. I'm so happy that you're able to meet the needs of so many of your clients and your home buyers. Unfortunately, I know that's not the case in every tribal community. And I'd like to, we've got time for one more topic, and I'm going to go to Jewel. Jewel, I'm actually going to give you the last word here before we close out the show. And a lot of what we're seeing in Indian Country with regard to the need for capital, the need for more credit, the need for more housing. And I think to myself, are we just experiencing growing pains as our tribal economies improve and more Native Americans are now in the position to be home buyers and there's limited access to credit? And or are we looking at something bigger? And I want to ask, I'm going to give you the final word again. Where do you see the future of Indian housing? Where are we going? Where are we going to be in the next generation, the generation beyond that? What do we tell our children in terms of what their future is as homeowners? Last word, Jewel.
I wished I had a crystal ball that gave clear vision of that, Sean, but I'm hopeful for the future. I know that we stay busy, and the business that's coming out of Indian Country, just not the first tribal, but through all the channels that are available through the lending communities, to those that do offer trust land transactions. I'd like to say there's a lot of hope out there. Them young people should just know that they have an avenue, work hard. I know it's, you know, traditionally kind of one of those things is, you know, it's hard to get by and what have you when you wake up every day and you see poverty and what have you. But I can tell you, there are good people on every reservation out there, and there are many, many homeowners that are living on the reservation today. We have a lot of credit-ready, income-ready Native people living in tribal housing that shouldn't be in tribal housing, that's just the way it is, and they don't like change, so they'll continue down that path, but we'll continue to work with those that choose to stop being on that waiting list, if you will, that the tribe has, and you seem to have a moving position, if you will, you know, every year on that waiting list. Those are the people that we're working with every day. I can leave work every day and know that we help somebody, you know, become a homeowner.
That's all the time we have for today's show. I want to say thank you to my guests, Jewel Burnett, Colleen Steele, and Isaac Perez. Join us Monday for another week of shows from a Native perspective. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Our associate producer is Andy Murphy. Marino Spencer is the engineer. Nola Daves Moses is the distribution director, and Bob Peterson is the network manager for Native Voice One. Clifton Chadwick is our national underwriting sales director. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor for National Native News. Charles Sather is our Chief of Operations. The President and CEO of Kahonic Broadcast Corporation is Jacqueline Salee. I'm your host, Sean Spruce. Have a great weekend.
For program support is by Montana State University in Bozeman, home to MSU's Native American Studies Department and over 750 Native students from 35 states. MSU is proud to announce the October 16th grand opening of its new American Indian Hall, a project over 15 years in the making. American Indian Hall, a crossroads of culture and student support. Montana.edu/AIH.
Support by Roswell Park, who know tribal communities face persistent challenges in health equity, such as cancer and higher death rates. The Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center is dedicated to advancing cancer research that will lead to translatable science, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous populations worldwide. Are you at high risk for cancer? A no-charge online assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.